Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
It's our weekly daily calendar rundown.
Did I say daily weekly?
Uh-huh. Did I do that again?
Okay, I can't remember.
Weekly daily.
I know, I don't. I was going to say weekly daily. Doesn't make sense to me. I'm JP, and this is another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we are one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S. We distribute free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On this week's episode, we're going to feature an interview and music from Parallax. We're going to talk to Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp. We're going to hear an archival interview with Wanda Jackson. And we're going to hear about a new art show at Blonde Grizzly. Parallax is a hardcore metal band from Provo, founded in 1998, who enjoyed an 8-year run, but one that ended tragically when lead singer Blake Donner died in August of 2005. The remaining members have banded together to re-release their 2006 LP, Mediums and Messages, as a final send-off for the group on December 17th. Slug's contributing editor Ricky Vigil sat with the band's bassist, Elliot Sechrist, to talk about the band and the re-release.
When did the band start?
I'm trying to think of the exact year. That's blurry between, I think, 98 or 99. I was in high school. Me and the original drummer, Rick Brimhall, and then Brandon Kennedy was the original bassist. We had been jamming for a while, and we got an offer to play with One King Down and Stretch Armstrong in a band called Diecast up in Logan. And so I called a friend of mine, initially trying to get a hold of his friend to sing, and that was Blake. He insisted that he sing instead of his friend, and so we just went with it, and it worked out.
Cool. What was Provo scene like back then? I mean, now, I don't know if it's any different, but now they're kind of known for having really mellow kind of music. Were there harder bands back then, or?
When we started, it was all new metal.
Oh, really?
New metal and ska, and then the Used, you know, we're starting right around the same time we were, and they blew up, and then all of a sudden every band was kind of that radio screamo style. And then, yeah, just more and more hardcore bands started showing up when we were playing. We got a lot of touring bands through. The soft indie rock was always big, like the BYU indie rock, so that's been going consistently since.
Yeah. So what kind of impact did you see Parallax having? Did you see Parallax having an impact in Provo, or?
Yeah, there was a time when every show, like even with only a day's notice of advertising, there would be at least like 100 to 150 kids at every show, and we all knew each other. They were all kids that weren't familiar with more underground punk and hardcore bands. We got a lot of kids into the music, a lot of bands started touring, got a lot of people to start playing music, because we were the only consistent hardcore band in Provo for a long time.
Yeah.
There would be like one that would spring up for a month or two and then stop. So I feel like we got a lot of kids playing music, a lot of kids into punk politics.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So I interviewed Tom Gable from Against Me last year, and that's kind of how I first found out about Blake.
Oh, yeah.
That he knew Blake because they would trade zines and stuff.
Yeah, they were pen pals for a while.
So kind of going from that, I know that Blake was into anarchist stuff and like train hopping and stuff. So what did he bring lyrically, or not even just lyrically, to the band?
Yeah, he started out, when we started the band, he was a Krishna devotee. And then he started questioning, I guess there was a lot of stuff he wasn't okay with going on at the Krishna temple. And then he started getting more into, anarchist philosophies. He started to realize you can't be part of an institution and be anarchist, and so he dropped that. His major in school was like humanities and philosophy, and so he was really influenced by the Situationists, the French Situationists, and Guy Debord. Yeah, that was, I think, and then obviously like Emma Goldman and all the big ones.
Did you guys, as a band, did you share those influences, or was that kind of his deal?
We all were on the same wavelength. I think he always wished we were more, like, active and more on his page, but I mean, he was a bit older than us. Not a whole lot, but he was older than everybody in the band, and we were fresh out of high school and just young kids, so like we'd all have our influences and talk about what the songs were about, and we were all on the same page for the most part.
So how did you guys get in touch with Counterintelligence, who put out the album on CD?
How did that come about? I feel like when, I might just be making this up in my head, but right when Blake graduated from high school, he lived in a monastery, a Krishna monastery in Philadelphia for a while. And just through that, like riding the bus every day, he met Kevin, the guy that ran Counterintelligence, and they were both into hardcore music. And then just years later, Kevin wanted to start a label, or we had seen that he already had released like a couple albums. He was coming through and he visited and saw us play a show and really liked it and just offered to put our CD out.
Cool. Was that a big deal? I know you guys put out a demo, and did you put out a 7-inch before that too?
Yeah, we had a 7-inch, and we had had, I think, total 3 demos. Maybe 4, I don't know, I lose track. But yeah, Kevin came out and it felt like a big deal. It seemed like he paid for the recording and we had paid for everything before then just out of our pocket. So it was pretty wild for us to not have to pay for a recording. And we spent a whole month recording with Andy Patterson. It seemed like a big deal. I mean, a lot of other bands were seemingly jealous, but it wasn't like it was some big record deal. It was just he put the CD out, give us a certain amount, and that was that.
So in kind of reading about the band, I was unsure whether or not Blake passed away while you were recording or if it was right after.
We had finished recording and we were just working on layout and artwork and like mastering, and that's when it happened. Just him and 3 other friends went into the cave. So the last We finished up the CD and attempted to go on a year after. My friend Jeff was singing. He'll be singing at the show in December. We had him sing, and then we didn't announce an official last show, just one show. I just decided it wasn't the same. And so this isn't like some reunion show or anything. It's just the last time we'll play the songs live.
Yeah.
And just for the record release, and anybody who cares to come and see it can.
When the album was released, I was looking and I found some older reviews from like 2006 or so. Was there much of a response nationally? Did you guys go on a tour or anything like that?
Yeah, that year when it came out, we did just a West Coast tour. And we had developed relationships all over the West, so we were really good friends with Bafa Bhegia and Basement Records in Reno, Acts of Sedition in Oakland, and Burial Year in Oakland. And then up in Seattle and Tacoma area, we were good friends with a band called Gray Skull and Owen Hart. And then there was other bands that we were all friends with, and so it was like this community that would just put each other up when we came to town. And so we did that touring. And then as far as reviews, I don't think there was a lot of really good reviews, other than I feel like we had one on Blabbermouth, the Roadrunner Records site, that was okay. And then Andrew from Aversion Online, he reviewed that Salt Lake hardcore comp, The Mean Streets of Salt Lake, and he totally just tore us apart and just said our guitars were out of tune, we were just playing over our heads, the drums sounded like cardboard. And then he got our demo and then that album and just gave us great reviews on both of those and has consistently like mentioned stuff about that album, how much he liked it. Other than that, I don't know how many really good reviews there were. I think there was a couple smaller webzines and
stuff. So how long had you guys been talking about reissuing the album, or have you at all?
I feel like it came up like 2 years ago, and then to get it actually rolling, like we'd mention it here and there and then never do anything about it. And just our friends that are doing Kitchen Now Records, they offered to do it, so we made a whole new layout. They remastered it, made it sound much better than the original. We've had our copies since the summer.
Well, I think the layout's really cool. I never saw the CD, but I really like the new art. I think that looks cool.
Yeah, that's great. We found that the rail spike with the atoms around it is actually taken off of a old caboose rail car in the Utah County train yards. We saw it and we were just like, that's amazing, and took a picture of it and just made a simple like stencil type print of it.
So what has it been like going back to these songs? You said it's been like 5 years since you really played them.
We're all wondering why we were playing so fast and what we were thinking. I don't know. I'm just not in the same mindset that I was when I wrote most of those songs, and so going back, it's weird. It's like just reminiscing and wondering what was going on to write in that. Like, just certain parts are really strange to me, and it doesn't make sense of why I chose to even do that, but it's been really fun.
Cool.
It's weird how it comes back, because you've played them so many times, it's just, we have to run through them a couple times and we start remembering the really fine details. That's where we focused a lot on just small details that didn't even repeat through the song. And I think that was one of the interesting things about the band, is just so much attention to just fine little details like that. I mean, the songs were long and there's like a million riffs in every song,
but
it made sense. It had a movement that made sense to all of us. Rather than doing like verse chorus, we worked a long time on all of the songs.
Watch Parallax perform at the re-release show Saturday, December 17th at Muse Music in Provo for just $6. The show starts at 8 p.m., and the group will be joined by Despite Despair and Hi-Fi Massacre. We'll be playing two tracks off of the re-released LP Mediums and Messages to pay homage to Donner's legacy. Here's Temple Shadows off Mediums and Messages.
The sky alone.
It's time once again for our monthly Yelp segment where we talk to Jeffrey Stedman. He's the community manager for the local Yelpers. And what does that entail again, Jeffrey?
So I am here to help people connect with great local businesses. We throw events. We, you know, just help connect people with great local businesses here in Salt Lake.
Great. And speaking of all these local businesses, we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects today, which would be pie.
Pie is my favorite subject, period. I mean, last month we talked about pho. It was near and dear to your heart, but it seems like this month you're even more excited.
Oh, yeah.
I do it for you.
I actually made a pie today, a banana cream pie.
That's serious.
An hour ago. It's chilling in the fridge.
That's serious. I wondered why you came in an apron today.
Oh, yeah.
It was cute, though.
And I got flour all over me.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with a place, actually, that I've been to before. I know we've got a little list of pie restaurants.
You got it.
I've only ever been to the Dodo, though.
So, well, yeah, we'll start at the Dodo. On Yelp, Dodo's got 3.5 out of 5 stars after 51 reviews. If you're not familiar with it, it's 1355 East 21st South, right there by Sugar House Park. Yeah, they're serious about the pies. That's a pie you can go in and share with your friends. They have a pastry chef who's on staff there. They're really, really decadent pies.
And they're huge portions.
They are huge portions, yeah. So Dan H. says, awesome banana cream pie, seriously worth getting off the diet to enjoy. I've had it. It's really, really good. My favorite, actually, is the peanut butter cream cheese pie. It's just, you know, like I say, decadent, rich. You can share it with your friend. And here's a little insider tip. Tuesdays, if you dine in at the Dodo for lunch or for dinner, it's buy one, get one free on your dessert. So buy a slice of pie, get a slice of pie free. Can't beat it Tuesdays.
This is a good heads up. And you got that intel from these Yelpers?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They're very smart.
Yeah. Well, they're always out there in the community just checking stuff like this out. So, yeah, the Dodo, real good. If you want to go for something that's a little more like mom's pie, you know, fruit pies and fruit cream pies, you got to hit up Left Fork Grill.
Where's that?
Left Fork is 68 West, 39th South. It's 3.5 out of 5 stars, 21 reviews. Laurie R. says, Left Fork Grill is one of my favorite breakfast places. Pie for breakfast. I love how crisp and tender the bottom crust is, and her favorite, oddly enough, is the banana cream pie.
What?
I know, right?
Conspiracy.
I've had the strawberry rhubarb there. It's really, really good. But it's, I mean, this is one of those places. It's a diner. The head waitress is named Mama, and you just go in and they take care of you. It's,
you know what? I've never been there before, but that is everything I want in a diner.
What, I mean, when Mama's taking care of you, there's nothing, you can't go wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're feeling good. Now, the last place I want to talk about is making a lot of waves in the Salt Lake pie scene right now. It's Penny Ann's Cafe, which is 4.5 out of 5 stars after 21 reviews.
Wow.
You ever been there? Have you?
No.
Okay, let me tell you about it. Penny Ann's is also kind of like a diner, but it's got a little Italian slant to it. They make all their stuff fresh, and they are killing it on the pies right now. It's 1810 South Main Street, right where the terrace apartments are. Ryan C. had this to say about their new pie. It is with a heavy heart, anticipating a serious blow to my diet, that I report that Penny Ann's has added a new pie flavor, peppermint. Graham cracker crust, a layer of chocolate ganache, a generous field of peppermint-flavored mousse topped with some crumbled, soft peppermint candies. It is absolutely delicious. And the next time I visit, I'll have a real decision on my hands, deciding between it and the peanut butter pie. I've had both. It's, I mean, Sophie's choice, really.
Can I say something?
Yes.
That sounded gross when you said peppermint pie, but that description sold me. They're pretty eloquent, these Yelpers.
Yeah, I tell you what, this pie is amazing. They have a ton of different pie flavors, and it's super affordable. Not just the pie, the whole thing. I think a slice of pie there is like less than $3. And
wow, I got some traveling to do.
Get on over to Penny Ann's Cafe, and they're just a nice family. They'll take care of you. Like I say, the food is really, really good and super affordable.
What are some other places around town people can go to get some good slices of pie?
You know what? I had a slice of pie at Layla that was like a macadamia chocolate mousse kind of pie after a meal. That was really, really good.
I'm really hungry, by the way.
Yeah.
This is all making me very hungry.
Well, it's pie.
I gotta go eat that pie.
And it's the right time of year for pie, too. Let's see who else has pie. Mama's Plantation, which is like, you know, southern soul food out in. They just relocated there in Midvale in the same parking lot as Walmart. They make a sweet potato pie that I need to go check out. You're shaking your head. You a sweet potato pie fan?
No, I am. Yeah, I was shaking my head with extra hunger because that sounds really good, man.
Damn. Yeah, I feel like, see, pie, it's been called the cupcake killer.
Pie craze?
Yeah, yeah.
Sweeping
pie, pie is the new black. No, really, like all along the West Coast, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, really, really pie heavy with, you know, mini pies and meat pies and fruit pies. And I'm just, everything I can do to bring that here into Salt Lake, I'm doing.
Yeah, cupcakes is so 2009, you know, and the mini cupcake craze. It's like, whatever. More pie shops. And it looks like they're sprouting up, meeting the demand.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's just hope they keep on coming in. And yeah, there's every day more and more great places to get pie here in Salt Lake.
How can people get involved with Yelp? Can you just run through really quickly how they might be able to get involved with the organization?
Yeah, so Yelp, it's free to sign up for an account on Yelp. You go to Yelp.com, create an account there, and you can start reviewing places, interacting with other Yelpers, adding friends, and then you'll see on the events page, you know, we post our own events. We'll go out and do tastings, we'll have parties, we'll go explore different neighborhoods or whatever it is. And then we also sponsor and support a bunch of other great events, so you can find out about those things. I put together a weekly newsletter every week. You can read it at Yelp.com/weekly. And I talk about 7 to 9 great local businesses, 5 upcoming events, and just kind of give people the lowdown on what's going on in their city.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Jeffrey. Anything else to add to the Yelp information or anything? Or the pie business?
No, let's just go out and try some of these pies. And if there's something, if there's a place that you love to get pie, I mean, get on Yelp and sign up and Yelp about it. I'd love to hear about some of those great pie shops in Salt Lake.
Well, thanks again.
You bet.
Yelp is going to be visiting us once a month for the podcast. We're glad to have them join us. You can check out the local section, yelp.com/salt-lake-city, for more information about goings-on about town. And find them on Twitter at Yelp Utah. Make sure you call our voicemail and leave us messages about what listeners would like to hear Yelp talk about next time. That number is 858-233-9324. Nature. Wanda Jackson is a rockabilly and country singer who was dubbed both the queen and the first lady of rockabilly. Her career spanned over both genres from the mid-50s to early 70s, and in 2009, Jackson collaborated with Jack White for the album The Party Ain't Over. Slug writer James Orham talked with Jackson back in February about the album and her legacy.
Tell me about your new record. I know it's kind of a different record for you. You work with Jack White. What was some of the standout moments for you doing the record and just your thoughts?
That's a big question. I was, of course, quite excited to know that a young man as popular as Jack White is, knowing that, you know, he had recorded Loretta a few years earlier and had a very successful album with her. So naturally, I was interested. I didn't know a lot about Jack's music, but, you know, began to pick up some albums and I listened. And so then I got a little bit worried. I thought, I wonder if he's going to want me to do the type of songs he does or this newer rock and roll stuff. And I didn't, I began to get a little bit frightened and I said, I'm not sure I can do it and I'm not sure I want to. And I'm not sure my fans would even want me to. So I had a lot of questions going in. Then we began sending songs back and forth, the songs he had picked out and the few that I'd picked out, and we shared those back and forth. And then I began to feel a little easier about it. The fact that I knew, you know, some of the songs, and they weren't off-the-wall rock and roll things. So there was one that I had a little trouble with. I didn't know whether I should record it or not, and that was Amy Winehouse. Good. But he talked to me and he said, no, I believe that would be an excellent song for you. And I said, well, now, Jack, I'm not going to sing that second verse that she has. We'll just have to skip that. I will not sing that. He said, oh, I didn't expect you to. He said, I've rewrote it. He had a little softer version of the second verse for me. I said, after all, we have to keep it age appropriate here. For it to be a comic record. Once that was done and he taught me the melody, I hadn't worked on it enough because I didn't think I would be recording it. But turned out to be the second song he wanted me to try. So he literally had to teach me the melody as we went along. Kept pushing me, wanting the performance. I wasn't sure what he was wanting because you know, Amy sang it so bluesy.
Yeah.
And kind of soft, you know, sexy-like. And so, and here he was, no, I want you to push a little harder. And I thought, he's trying to get this little feisty 18-year-old that I used to be. And, but you know what, I was able to please him. I just kept pushing and trying harder until he was finally happy. And I said, well, Jack, with this album, you know, you pushed me all along, but I think you pushed me right into the 21st century. So I'm very happy with the results, and I had a good time working on it. I don't mind work if you come out with a good product. I felt very satisfied.
In 1954, and maybe I read this wrong, but in 1954 you recorded with Hank Thompson, maybe your first recording. What are some of the similarities between recording back then and, say, recording with Jack now? Is there any, or is it just completely different?
When I stepped into Jack's studio at Third Man, he has a studio on the grounds of his home, and it was like stepping into a time machine. Here was the analog equipment, and once again, this looked like a real engineering room, to me. And I loved that aspect of it. Also, we had done a song that just wasn't coming off the way he hoped that it would, and I'm not sure what was wrong, but he said, I don't want to use that. Do you have a song, just off the top of your head, that's something you've always wanted to record and you haven't? And it didn't take me long to come up with the song of Elvis's, Like a Baby. So I told him about it. He went to the computer, listened to it, and flipped over it too. He said, I've never heard this, but it's great. And he said, we'll do it tomorrow. And so I thought, well, how, you're going to record the track or something tonight? Or he said, no, the guys will come in tomorrow. We'll do it all right here live. So that was just like I'd always recorded in the early days. So that was sure a lot of fun for me to get to stand right in there and have that music around me. Or one day I stopped by the studio and the girl backup singers were doing their parts and having a little trouble on some phrasing or something. So I went in and started singing with them. And they said, would you mind doing your part over and just singing it with us? And I said, heavens no, I'd love to do that. So you hear that on Teach Me Tonight and Rum and Coca-Cola. We were standing right there together singing them.
That's amazing. It sounds like you found so much joy in doing these songs and kind of doing them, like you said, kind of the old way, the analog way.
That he still prefers to record that way, because all of us that had that opportunity to record like that, we know it's the best way. You get something comes through that record that you can't get when everyone's doing their parts in separate rooms and then all mixed together like a cake. I was real thrilled with that.
I'm also a fan of country music, and your country stuff is some of the best. I'll admit that your version of Making Believe has made me cry before. So I just wanted to talk to you. Do you think of yourself as a country singer or a rock and roll singer, or is it just some kind of mixture of both?
Well, country and early rock music is like Kiss and Cousins. Anyway, I find that anyone who likes one pretty well likes the other, because you'd be surprised how many requests I get for Making Believe, or That's Why I'm Walking, and those songs. And I do about three real country songs in my set, and they just love them. I do a yodel song, for instance, and it just blows them away. It's such an old thing that it's new, I guess, to them. I do a Hank Williams gospel song, and I do the song I wrote that was my signature song in country music, and Right or Wrong. I don't have any trouble switching from one to the other. I pretty well always have in my concert. My set list will always have a little of both.
Are you happy to turn people on to, like you say, Hank Williams and other country artists, your country stuff as well? Is that something you kind of, I guess, maybe I've always kind of thought of you maybe taking a little pride in that you're kind of a huge gateway. If somebody likes the early rock and roll stuff, maybe they'll try Hank Williams' song because they heard you sing it once or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way to describe it.
And now, who do you listen to? I mean, when you want to listen to music and maybe relax, I'm just curious if do you go back to the old artists maybe you listened to before you started singing, or is there anybody current?
Well, I listen to some current country artists, but I find I go back and get some of their, I listen to their albums and things from, say, the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Even the country artists have gotten so, their songs are so popish.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys still have a lot of country stuff, but I just don't care for the type of song. So I go back, I listen to Garth and some of his first albums and Reba for things. I loved the Dixie Chicks. Of course, they had to change their style too. So I'm kind of stuck listening to the older things. I love Vince Gill and Brooks and Dunn. A lot of Oklahoma artists there, and I noticed that they're some of the best. And then I still listen to some compilations of things of Elvis's and Jerry Lee. I listen to quite a bit of gospel music also.
Some of the best music in the world.
Yeah. You talk about uplifting. Now that lifts your spirits.
For more info on Jackson's career, tour dates, albums, and more, you can check out her website at wandajackson.com. And to read the online exclusive article on Jackson, check out our archives at slugmag.com.
They got all the young girls going mad. Young girls say they treat them nice. Make Trinidad like paradise.
It's time for our weekly Daily Calendar rundown. We'd like to sit down with editorial assistant Esther Moronio.
Happy to be here.
Speaking of happy events, speaking of segues, let's knock out the happy birthdays right at the start, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Let's change it up.
We've got
some slug staffers we like to recognize every week, and let's start with Tuesday, December 13th's birthday.
It's John Robertson. He's one of our music writers.
Happy birthday, John.
Happy birthday.
And then coming up on the 18th, we've got resident expert designer, a man of many hats. He does a lot of stuff for us, Josh Joy.
Mm-hmm. He designs most of the issue. It is his birthday. Happy birthday, Josh.
Thanks again, Josh. And Monday, December 19th.
Happy birthday to Ross Solomon. He's also one of our slug writers.
And now that we got the birthdays out of the way, let's jump into the events.
Okay.
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses.
Let's just start that off right now at the Maverick Center, Tuesday, December 13th.
Are you going to be there?
No, I'm sorry. I was going to pretend, but it's not worth it to pretend about that. Mm. I'm not going to be there. I've got better things to do, probably like reading a book.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest about that.
I'm
and
sure
you?
That some of our fans will be there.
So, yeah. Probably just for the sheer hipster irony of the event.
Nostalgia, right?
Yeah, that's what you could call it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And December 14th, this is something we can all get behind, actually. It's way better than Guns N' Roses. There's an event at Brighton Resort for the Road Home Shelter.
Mm-hmm. If you go to Brighton that day and you donate a coat, gloves, or an unopened bag of socks, you actually get a $20 lift pass for the day.
And usually they're, what, 40 or 50? I don't know. I haven't been to Brighton in a minute.
I think they're a little more than that. They're probably like $80 or something like that.
So you could buy an $8 bag of socks and get a $20 lift ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
While you're helping the road home.
I think it's a good deal.
And Thursday, December 15th, we've got a punk rock show, Bert's Tiki Lounge.
Yes, we do.
DRI, which stands for?
Dirty Rotten Imbeciles.
And what would you describe those guys as?
They're a thrash metal band that started in 1982, and they're playing with some really awesome locals as well.
Endless Struggle and Desolate.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be pretty awesome. And my favorite event of every month, we've got another edition of Slug Localized coming up on December 17th. Urban Lounge is going to have a hip-hop show.
Yes, it is. And actually, Chris Proctor is the one who wrote the localized feature.
Chris just keeps popping up.
I know.
A little biased, but I don't blame you, for the record. One of my favorite DJs in town, Chase12, is going to be there, along with Scenic Byway.
And Mark Dago. Did you already say that?
No, you just did. Mm. Thanks for that, by the way.
Should be really awesome. I'll definitely be there.
I hear that there's a snowboard event on the weekend. Will you fill me in on that?
Yeah, it's World Snowboarding Day, similar to Go Skateboarding Day in the summer, except for it's snowboarding. I don't think it's really like it is an official day, but it's the sixth year that We're celebrating it, and there's going to be some events around town. Just check out your local resort and see what's going on, and go snowboarding that day.
That's a really exciting week. That's one of our most jam-packed weeks we've had.
There's a lot going on.
So if you need a handy chart at home, there's a reference in the back of every Slug magazine. You can fill out your calendars with all the information. It's called the Daily Calendar section. You can find it on our webpage at slugmag.com, right there on the front page. I tell everyone from out of town, if they're in town, they ask me, what am I supposed to do? I say, I don't know. Go read the magazine, man. Leave me alone. Well, I'm more nice than that. I'm not that big of an asshole. But
they don't come visit you again, do they?
Yeah, they probably don't. I'm pretty bad host. I don't really turn the heat on.
You're a good Soundwaves host, though.
Hey, thank you. Oh, Sarah, thank you. Where else can people find out Daily Calendar info?
Our iPhone app.
Great, yeah. It's free, right?
Go download it. Our free iPhone app.
Go download it, and thanks once again, Esther, for joining us for our daily, weekly calendar rundown.
You're so welcome.
Earlier in the episode, we mentioned Parallax's re-release of their old 2006 LP, and this is the second track from that LP, called Dent.
Red days dark, desperate days, the control of violence is fading away. There is no guarantee that an authentic life will ever be seen.
Desire, no one. I was up in front of the judge for my arraignment. The judge said my biggest problem with this case is that this guy, this current person we're judging, ran from the police for a month. And I if I could have spoken, of course I wasn't allowed to speak, I would have said it's been a lot more than a month. I've been running from you people all my life. All my life. And I'm going to keep running.
Remember, you can see Parallax perform at the re-release show at Muse Music in Provo on December 17th. If you have any fond memories about Parallax you'd like to share, make sure to call us at 858-233-9324. Vic Back is a tattoo artist from Salt Lake City, whose career took off when he became a traveling artist for rock tours. Recently, Back has branched out as a painter, displaying intricate designs in the SLC art scene. This month for Gallery Stroll, he's going to be curating the Nutcracker show at Blonde Grizzly. The show features a dozen different artists with their own take on the holiday figurine. Slug writer Mariah Mellis recently interviewed Back and Caleb Barney from Blonde Grizzly about the show and the art on display.
Vic, why did you come up with the Nutcracker theme?
Last year, I was having craft night at home with my wife, and we were making Christmas tree ornaments and lots of different cute little things. I just came up with the most amazing, coolest idea in the whole world. And then after that, I decided that I should put a Nutcracker show on. We only had 2 weeks at that point, and I had talked to Caleb about it, so we decided to do it in a year from then, which was a little over a year ago right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was that first Nutcracker? What did it look like?
It had a really big nose, a drum set, and its name was Ringo Starr, and accompanied by George, Paul, and John.
Nice. And are they going to be on display here in the December show?
Yes. Yes, the Beatles will be here for the show, Sergeant Pepper.
Excellent. So we can have the Nutcracker show starring the Beatles.
And the Beatles will be here.
And the Beatles so, will
so
be here.
So you should definitely come down.
Vic, tell us a little bit about the process of gathering all these artists together. There's a list of like 15 or more artists, and with the Nutcracker theme, is everybody going to do a Nutcracker?
I hope so, because if they don't, then it might be weird. I bought this big wheel at a thrift store that had every single artist name in the whole world on it, and I spun it 30 times, and then that's how I picked everybody.
So if you're inspired and you work with, and these are blocks of wood we're making Nutcrackers of, you don't make them out of paper or paint them, or can they?
It doesn't
or...
matter. There's one guy's making one out of metal, and it's a big Nutcracker head. It has a hammer on it and a rail spike with a spring, and you hit the rail spike and it will actually break a chestnut, and then it comes out of its mouth.
Nice. So do these have to be working Nutcrackers? Is there going to be some kind of test given to the Nutcrackers when they get here? Like what size
no.
nut can they crack?
It's a good idea, though.
Yeah, maybe.
I think if you're going to jury or judge it, you should.
Next year we might do a Nutcracker that actually cracks nuts competition.
You could have the people that grow nuts come in and bring the biggest nut possible, like the person who grows the biggest mm-hmm. pumpkin, and
yeah.
see if it can like stand up to the Nutcracker.
Yeah, and whichever Nutcracker can bust a nut the best, then that'll be...
This is great. I love how we can play this off. We have the Bust the Nut competition at the Nutcracker show at Blonde yeah. Grizzly. That's awesome.
December 2013. Look out.
Nice. What are the hours? When are you guys open?
Well, it's just me, Caleb. I have a child, and so if I can't be here, we don't open. So
is that by appointment? You can see the show or
no.
come by?
Most days I will be here from 11 to 6. We are closed on Sunday and Monday. But yeah, if you're worried, call ahead, 801-355-9075. And if I don't answer, I'm probably not here. So don't come.
But if you're here before 6 on a Tuesday, or if you come down for lunch, you know,
totally.
You should swing by here before you hit the bar, you know. On your way to the Green Pig, or on your way to, you know, Jackalope or something, you
on
come
your way
in.
To my attorney's office, that's right there.
Oh, nice. Or on your way to the law office.
That's
maybe
true.
You need to check out X
the
Mission.
Way.
Swing by Blonde Grizzly and check out the show. See if Caleb's here. Say hi.
Hopefully.
Hopefully he will be. And then if you're interested in participating in next year's show, you better start coming up with ideas.
Shoot us an email.
And shoot an email over to Caleb at caleb@blondegrizzly.com.
Correct.
For more information on Back and his artwork, check him out at vicback.com. That's vicback.com. To learn more about the Nutcracker show, visit blondegrizzly.com. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Sound Waves from the Underground. For more info about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, visit slugmag.com. And remember, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything else you'd like to say about the show, send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com. Or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our associate producers are Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art designed by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Make sure you join us next week for our all-metal roundtable with writers from slugmag.com's metal blog, Napalm Flesh.